You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. I'm David Ermillo, credentialed reporter and the host of Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Please make sure to subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts to get the latest episodes. Today's show is brought to you by Built Bar, the best tasting protein bar ever. The Miami Heat were facing the Indiana Pacers in Game 1 of the opening round of the NBA playoffs. There were a lot of questions about how the Heat would match up with Indiana, but there was little doubt about how Jimmy Butler would step up because playoff Jimmy is a real thing. Butler would lead all scorers as Miami cruised to a 113-101 victory. I'll give you a full recap, go through the good, the bad, the ugly, and answer your questions about the game. Started off a little promising for Miami. Actually, they built a big lead early on, and then unfortunately, Indiana was able to find a way to cruise back into it. They wound up taking the lead and challenging Miami. And then midway through the first quarter, or late in the first quarter, I want to say, Victor Oladipo took an inadvertent shot to the eye by Jay Crowder. It looked like Crowder was trying to sweep the ball out of Oladipo's hands after he had pulled down a rebound and poked Depo in the eye there. Crumbled to the ground, hit two free throws, because if not, the Heat would have had the opportunity to choose somebody off their bench to knock down those free throws, but Oladipo stayed in long enough to hit those shots and went to the locker room and never returned to the game. Looked like the eye was swelling, and I'm not sure what his availability will be like for Game 2 on Thursday, but that certainly seemed to at least infuse the Pacers with a little bit more energy. They seemed like they were much more aware of what they needed to do in order to overcome the loss of Oladipo. And that's, of course, without Jeremy Lamb, who's been out for the season. Domas Sabonis, who was likely out for the rest of the series as he's dealing with foot issues. They're already shorthanded. To lose Oladipo was a significant problem as well. And they responded pretty well. They outscored Miami 33-27 in that first quarter before Miami was able to mount a comeback in the second quarter. They actually outscored them 29-19, took a 4-point lead into the half, and then the second half was just back and forth for the most part until the fourth quarter, when all of a sudden Jimmy Butler caught fire. 28 points again, 8 of 15 from the field, 10 of 12 from the line, had been able to get to the line pretty consistently, and knocked down 2 3-pointers almost on consecutive plays there, just to remind everybody that he was still capable of knocking down the big shot. Obviously, Jimmy's struggles with his long distance shooting have been a problem all season long, but he seemed like he was confident. He seemed like he was engaged. He was pissed off. The matchup with TJ Warren, as much as he had tried to downplay it, I think maybe Butler wasn't necessarily egged on by the matchup of Warren, but that didn't stop him from being a little bit more excited. He was definitely engaged after the game. He did not talk about the matchup of Warren or anything like that. I know it's been kind of overplayed, but he seemed like he was just ready to go, and he certainly had a huge performance in Game 1. Warren finished the game with 22 points, 9 of 18 from the floor, played 38 minutes, so a long game for him, again, having to step up. The real threat from Indiana was Malcolm Brogdon. He was able to get past that initial defender at the point of at the perimeter line, and was able to drive to the hoop either to create plays for himself at the rim or to create plays for others. That's despite only shooting 1 of 6 from 3-point range. He also finished with 22 points, 9 of 10 from the line. Again, being able to make contact because of his size. He's crafty in that he's not particularly quick. He's not a Kemba Walker type on pick and roll situations that can get past the initial defender, but he's still strong enough and quick enough to be able to create space for himself and draw contact. And some of those foul calls, I'll admit, were perhaps a little iffy. But Miami actually started off with the starting lineup that I expected them to be. I had predicted that they would insert Goran Dragic into the starting lineup in place of Kendrick Nunn. Nunn seemingly falling out of the rotation there. I think a lot of people were debating whether or not it would be Goran Dragic or Tyler Hero. But just given what Eric Spoelstra has said about Goran and the fact that he trusts Dragic to step up, I think that was what led to the decision to start Goran Dragic. So it was Dragic, Duncan Robinson, Jay Crowder, Bam Adebayo, and Jimmy Butler. Tyler Hero came off the bench, had a pretty big game, something I'll talk about a little bit later. And Kendrick Nunn, unfortunately, did not play any time at all. It's something else that I had predicted. So Myers Leonard, Kendrick Nunn, two longtime starters during the course of the regular season, both of them inactive for the game, or at least did not play due to coaches' decisions. Tyler Hero stepping up. He had 34 minutes of gameplay and also finished with 15 points, 5 of 9 shooting. Seemed like he was confident. His shot was not falling particularly well, but he seemed like he was not shy of the moment, which is a huge concern for the young core of Miami. We were, again, when that core consisted of Duncan Robinson, Tyler Herro, and Kendrick Nunn, two rookies and a second-year player who didn't get much playing time last season, you're not quite sure how they're going to respond. And I'll talk about Duncan's performance in the next segment, but Tyler seemed to be ready to go, did not shy away from the moment, and I think we could have predicted that based on how he stepped up over the course of the regular season, and he seems to have another level when it's a clutch situation. So the difference in the game was clearly Jimmy Butler. Ultimately, that's what you take away from this, is that Jimmy Butler stepped up. It's nice to have guys like Goran have huge performances, and certainly they did. But at the same time, the difference was Jimmy. TJ Warren, for as much as he's been productive in the Orlando bubble, had moments there where he just was taking bad shots, wasn't enough, didn't seem like he was as fluid as he had been when he was putting up those big shots. Again, 9 of 18 from the field, 4 of 5 from three-point range, clearly showing zero trips to the line, a different style of play. He's not the kind of guy that you can rely on to get you a big bucket or to get to the line to slow the game down when it matters most. And I think that was ultimately the problem, is that Warren just couldn't seem to do much to change the tide of the game. He was able to knock down those shots pretty consistently. It's good to have a scorer like that as your second or third option. And that's the other takeaway from that, is that Indiana, as much as they challenged Miami, they were missing some key players there, not just Oladipo, but Sabonis and Jeremy Lamb. So I would be slightly discouraged of this. I'm actually kind of discouraged by the loss, because I think that Miami didn't play well. They were missing some of the scoring that they normally get from Duncan Robinson and others, but at the same time, they did not play the kind of game that they could. They had moments, and I think that's a big part of it, is that they had moments where they were really fluid, really engaged. I saw greatness there during the course of the game, but there were other times there where they were kind of bogged down by Indiana, and I know that's a Pacers style of play. They slow things down. They go to the mid-range game. They don't take a lot of threes. And I think that was a problem for Miami, not the style of play, not the tempo that they'd like in order to maximize their offense. But at the same time, just not the most effective performance from them. The difference was having a guy like Jimmy Butler who could step up and be able to deliver the knockout punch, because Indiana just was lacking that. They don't have anybody on the roster like that. They have complimentary guys, very good complimentary guys in Warren and Brogdon. But without an Oladipo at his peak, or even a Sabonis as the hub of an offense, just not enough there, unfortunately, for the Pacers. But for Miami, they came away with a big win. A good start. I think they'll tweak things. I think we still could see some changes to that starting lineup. I don't think that as good as Goran's performance was in Game 1, I don't know that Eric Spoelstra is completely willing to leave him in there. Look, Goran struggled to start off the game. He was, in Jimmy Butler's words, a little stinky. That was Butler speaking after the game, talking about Goran's performance there. He did struggle early on, then he was able to step up late. And again, 9 of 19 from the floor, 4 of 9 from three-point range. So that shooting was there. And we were wondering whether or not he was going to be able to fit in well with the second unit, or whether or not he'd be able to kind of play alongside the first unit. Defensively, there were holes there, as I mentioned before. He could not guard Brogdon. They were also starting Aaron Holiday there, so they didn't have much shot creation. A lot of one-and-one ISO play there from the Pacers, and unfortunately for Dragic, he was victimized on a number of those occasions there. So it's going to be interesting. Again, not a particularly great showing from Indiana, from Miami rather, although they were able to pull away with a 12-point victory. They shot fairly well, 50% overall from the field and 37.1% from three-point range. So Caitlin Cooper, who will be a guest on the show later on this week, had pointed out that Miami does struggle when they shoot below 35% on three-point attempts. Luckily, they were able to improve that three-point percentage enough in the second half, so they were actually shooting 34%, I think, during the third quarter when she tweeted that out. And so that was pretty interesting to see that they would eventually wind up improving enough during the fourth quarter there. Again, when they outscored the Pacers by 11 points to cruise to a 12-point victory. So a good win for them. I would imagine that there's another level for them to reach, and hopefully they'll be able to do that in Game 2. I'll talk a little bit about Duncan Robinson's struggles in Game 1 and answer your questions about the game. But first, a reminder to start your morning with the news that matters. In just 10 minutes, Axios Today host Nyla Boodoo and a team of award-winning journalists will bring you the latest analysis and insight into the trends shaping our world. Speaking of our world, You want to be able to continue safely supporting restaurants in your community. There are thousands of restaurants that are open for delivery on DoorDash that need your patronage now more than ever. Support your favorite restaurants on DoorDash. It's easy to order. You open the app, you choose what you want to eat, and your food will be left safely outside your door, especially with a new contactless delivery drop-off setting. Right now, our listeners can get $5 off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when they download the DoorDash app and enter the code LOCKEDONNBA. That's $5 off, zero delivery fees on your first order when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter the code LOCKEDONNBA. It's the app that brings you your food when you're craving it right now to your door. Don't forget, that's code LOCKEDONNBA for $5 off your first order with DoorDash. Subscribe to the show on your favorite app to listen to podcasts and always get the latest episode by asking your smart device to play Locked On Heat when you get in your car to get your team every day. I wanted to talk a little bit about Duncan Robinson because, again, as I pointed out in the first segment, there were questions about how he would respond in his first taste of the playoffs. Not a guy who is typically considered or has a reputation to be a clutch performer. If you listened to my show from the previous day, which I hope you did, and if not, please go and do so. He did talk about how reputations are built around the league. A lot of that seems to be overblown by media, although he did mention that Jimmy Butler was deserving at least of his reputation as being a clutch player, and I think we saw that in game one. He was also telling me how he had been looking forward to the playoffs, how he wanted to answer and respond to those naysayers that were questioning whether or not he as a young player would be able to respond. Unfortunately, did not have the kind of response that he wanted. He was able to knock down his first three-pointer, curling off the screen as he often does, getting to that corner, was able to knock it down, and you thought it was going to be the start of a good game for him. Unfortunately, Duncan only finished 2 of 8 from the field, all 8 field goal attempts from three-point range, of course, 6 points, so knocking down those two. He even missed a free throw, which is very, very atypical of him. He had mentioned to me also that one of the areas that he wanted to improve on the most was getting to the line more regularly because he is a good free throw shooter and just was not able to do that, at least in game one. So I looked at every one of those shots and nothing really stood out. You can't really tell much from Duncan Robinson's shot selection because so many of those shots are really difficult ones, and that's the norm for him. He's just going to curl off screens. He's going to be able to create just a little bit of space, just enough to get that shot off. And that was the case in game one too. He had a couple wide open looks. Now, the thing that bothers me the most is that a lot of those shots were way off. There was one that was sailed completely left of the rim, another one that clanked off the backboard. It was just an ugly shooting display from him. So from what I see of that, and I want to answer this question that comes in from Tanisa, and she asks, was it the Pacers' defense on Duncan that causes game one shooting slump or just missing shots? Will game two run on Duncan? So a good question and a valid one. I don't think it was the Pacers' defense. I think they did what is typical of defenses trying to key on him. They did go to one-on-one situations there where they weren't really throwing multiple defenders on him. He was able to get pretty open looks again on occasion in fast break opportunities. He was able to flare out to the three-point line or again from the wing, waiting for the catch and shoot situation, just wasn't able to knock it down. And so I don't think there was anything that Indiana did particularly well to throw off Duncan, which is a huge concern. But at the same time, if I had to make a guess, and again, we're all just kind of speculating here because Duncan didn't speak to media afterwards. I'm sure he's a little upset about his performance there because he did want it to be a big one. I think he'll have a bounce back game. Knowing him and seeing what we've seen from him in his season here with Miami, I think he'll go put in the work today, try to get his mind right. And one of the things that he pointed out to me again in the interview, and I hate to keep referring to it, but it was very insightful, and he had said that when it came to what he'd heard from older teammates, more experienced teammates like Dragic and Butler, et cetera, is that you don't worry about one game. What happens in one game isn't indicative of what can happen in the rest of the series. And so you hope that Robinson will be able to kind of shed the stink off of this bad performance and bounce back. And I think he will. I think, again, based on the kind of shots that he was missing, the way he was missing those shots so badly, I'd have to say there was a lot of jitters, a lot of energy there. And he was probably just a little too amped up. You saw him do something pretty, again, atypical when he did hit a big three-pointer, his second three-pointer in the game, drew a foul there on Edmund Sumner, I want to say. And as he did, he kind of pumped his fist, yelling at nobody in particular, trying to psych himself up. And I think that was kind of indicative of how much he needed that boost there. And unfortunately, he wasn't able to build on that any further and continue to struggle from the field. So if I had to guess, I would say that he'll bounce back at some point. Maybe it won't be game two, but I wouldn't necessarily consider that this will be the norm for him moving forward. I think it was atypical. I think it was a little bit out of the ordinary, and I think he'll have a fine series and he'll be able to continue contributing at a high level. So if anything, if there's a plus out of this, is that you miss your third most impactful player in Duncan Robinson, and he winds up having a pretty poor game. Even Jay Crowder, whose shooting you rely on so heavily, he only wound up scoring 8 points, going 3 of 6 for the field, 2 of 5 from three-point range. So solid overall, but not particularly gaudy statistic or production there. And so despite that, Miami was able to still pull away with a victory, an ugly victory, but a win nonetheless. The good, again, Tyler Hero stepping up there. The fact that you were able to count on him as a rookie to step up in 34 minutes of play, that's huge. Unfortunately, again, the other side of that is the ugly, and that's that Kendrick Nunn just is out of the rotation. I saw a lot of people saying this would be a move that would bounce a bite Miami back in the ass, that Eric Spoelstra might be a little too rash with his decision to pull Nunn completely. I'm not sure what the psychology is behind Spo's decision. One, I can tell you that he's starting Goran because he trusts Goran. The move paid off. Dragic with 24 points on 9-19 shooting was huge. He controlled the tempo. He was getting his shots. He was just very, very effective and efficient. I don't know you can count on that considering his age, but he's a gamer, and I think that's a huge plus for Spoelstra and Miami, is that they see in him that he has the capacity to still step up in key moments there. He's had 6 rebounds, 5 assists too, so a good overall game from Dragic. From Nunn, maybe they're not willing to throw him into the fire just yet, and maybe they don't see that he's willing or capable of responding. That this game, this season, as good as it's been for Kendrick, might be more of the unusual side that he's kind of stepped up. But now, if he doesn't feel his shot, if he's not confident, and he's not productive any other way, particularly defensively, what's the point of having him out there? Again, with Goran, you know you're going to give up points defensively because he's older and because maybe he was never that great a defender, but you know what you're going to get from him, at least offensively, and that's what you got in game one, 24 points. You can't overlook that. I don't know that you would have gotten that kind of production from Nunn, and if that's the case, why have him out there? You know, it's, you want to show commitment to a player that's gone through as much as Goran has with his team. And while a lot of people might say, well, you want to kind of build up your youngsters' production, you want to build up their confidence, I'm not sure why, but maybe they just don't feel that invested in Kendrick. I don't know. I don't have any kind of idea there. No one's willing to ask Eric Spoelstra why he's screwing over Kendrick Nunn or why he's keeping him out of the rotation. I don't have any answers there. The bad, however, is Kelly Olynyk. I wasn't quite sure what to make of Kelly's performance here, because he only wound up having 14 minutes, 2 of 4 from the field, 1 of 3 from three-point range for 5 points. So not a great shooting night for him. Something that we had kind of hoped that we would see more regularly based on his performance during the scrimmages and the first few seeding games. It looked like Kelly had turned a corner and he was just going to be a really solid contributor. We got bad Kelly, quote-unquote bad Kelly. Those were my words there. And he only played 14 minutes. This was the kind of game where Olynyk can't be playing much because he defensively he's not going to be doing much. Their second unit, Indiana's second unit, is not very good. But if there's anything encouraging from Miami's production from their reserves, is that they are deep. You can go to a guy like Hero and have him be a big game. Andre Iguodala only had 4 points. Derrick Jones Jr. only had 6 points. So combined 14 points, 15 points, excuse me, from your bench other than Tyler Hero, who contributed 15 points of his own. And so that's not ideal. You could hope for more, but I wonder if maybe that's where Kendrick eventually slots in, is to be a productive guy off the bench. There are questions about his fit. There are questions about whether or not he needs somebody else to be the primary playmaker. I still think that could be Tyler Hero, kind of looking to Kendrick to get him the ball and catch and shoot situations. Hopefully that'll work itself out. If not, I don't see that Kendrick Nunn is going to be a productive player moving forward. So Myers Leonard, again, I should reiterate, also did not play. Solomon Hill did not play. Neither did Udonis Haslam. Those were the DNP coaches' decisions for the game. I'll continue answering some more of your questions about game one win over the Pacers in the next segment. You're listening to Locked On Heat. One thing you can always count on is the taste of Built Bar. It's one of the best tasting, it is the best tasting protein bar ever. And I just wanted to talk to you about it because I think it's been such a reliable snack for me. We've been so lucky to be able to have some sample flavors delivered to our house so we can be able to try those out. We ordered more after those because they've been so good. They're even more delicious than ever, more deliciouser. 18 amazing flavors, including 6 new flavors, caramel brownie, cookies and cream, cherry barcia, lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake. That sounds delicious. I haven't tried that one yet. And apple almond crisp. So good. And just... they're so good for you. They're healthy. They taste great. They're covered in 100% chocolate. They're soft and easy to choose. They're great for the health conscious person, whether you want to lose or maintain weight, or you just want a delicious treat. They're low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber. They're great for keto diets. So good for you. While supplies last, if you put it in an order now, you can get a free cooler with your purchase. But if you go to BuiltBar.com, use the promo code LOCKEDON to get $10 off your next order. Use the promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off your BuiltBar.com purchase. They're the best tasting protein bar that you've ever had. You won't regret it. Go to BuiltBar.com. Just a reminder that you can always reach me via email at lockedonheat@gmail.com or via Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Later on this week, I'll have Rohit Karni of Sports Illustrated to talk about Miami's chances of advancing, as well as Caitlin Cooper to give her perspective on what the Pacers can do to adjust. So make sure you stay tuned for that. I'll start off with some of these questions, including this one from Jay Jack, one of the friends of the show, who writes in, Jimmy's 2 3-pointers are promising, but will they last? No, they won't. I think Jimmy's strength is getting to the line. I think it's controlling the pace of the offense and doing everything else that he does. He's so effective defensively, and I think he looks good. There was a little bit of an injury scare there where he was up for a layup, I want to say, and he got fouled on the play, came down hard on his left wrist, was clutching at it there. And you know that it's going to be painful for a guy like Jimmy to respond that way because that's not typical of him. And so I would have to say that between the lingering injuries, the fact that there has been some confidence issues there over the course of the season, willing to take those, I don't see that he's going to be very reliable as a three-point shooter. But he doesn't have to be, and that's the whole thing. There are other shooters on this team. Guys like Duncan, guys like Tyler Hero, even Goran Dragic, Andre Iguodala, Crowder, etc. Guys willing to take that shot a little bit more regularly than Jimmy. Jimmy can just do everything else that he does. Getting to the line, creating with his mid-range game, using his passing ability to create plays for others. Overpassing a little bit is what we saw in game one, but still, I think his overall mindset is to continue to try and get guys good looks, and that he can do that by drawing defenders as he gets to the rim. So I wouldn't count on Jimmy as a long-range scorer for the rest of the series, but he's still going to be productive and great, which is all you need him to do. Taylor Rooster Monk writes in, the minutes without both Bam and Jimmy on the floor were bad today. I get you want to do that during a regular season game, but in a playoff game one, they should always be on the court. He's referring to key moments there during the third quarter when it looked like Indiana might pull away as they were competing very well with Miami, and I think they had a slight lead in the third quarter, if I recall correctly, and both Bam and Jimmy were off the floor. I got to disagree with this one. I had that same reaction at first. In fact, there was one particular play there where Indiana came back to take that lead or was cutting into the lead pretty dramatically. I can't recall exactly which. And my first instinct was, well, you know, call a timeout, stop the bleeding. And I think we've seen this from Greg Popovich as well. You know, sometimes you just need to leave your guys out there and give them the vote of confidence because they're worried, oh, shit, I made a mistake. I'm going to get the hook or you're going to yell at us and stuff like that. These are human beings that are perfectly aware of the fact that they're making mistakes on occasion. And so to be taken out of the game, I think could be a little jarring for them. And so Spoelstra, and I'm impressed by this, to his credit, left him in there. This was, you know, a unit led by Kelly Olynyk, Tyler Hero, I think Derek Jones Jr., and they responded well. They forced 2 turnovers from Indiana in ensuing possessions. They were able to knock down those shots. They built a little bit more of a cushion, just enough to keep the fires going until Jimmy and Bam came back to close the door there. And again, that was with Goran Dragic as a team's closer too. So I think you have to kind of read the room a little bit, and I applaud Spoelstra for those decisions. I understand that you might want to stagger those lineups, but for whatever reason, Spoelstra is willing to keep Bam and Jimmy out there for those minutes, and I wonder what that is. I don't know if it's a chemistry issue. Again, it's Jimmy drawing defenders as he gets to the rim and being able to dump it off to Bam, who then focuses on being the hub of the offense because he can kick it out to perimeter scores, or maybe just that kind of dribble handoff game that he's worked so well with Duncan Robinson. I'm not sure what it is, to be honest with you. I haven't seen why he doesn't stagger those lineups. It's not like he doesn't. I think we could go back and watch and recognize that he does stagger those lineups to some degree with either Bam on the floor or Jimmy on the floor. You can't have him out there all the time, especially if you're making a deep playoff run. And I think you want to continue to rely on your depth. I think it's the strength of this team. Spoelstra certainly sees that way, and I think it was the right decision. So as much as I understand the concern, you want to have your best unit out there for 40 minutes. That's not realistic. That's probably not in your best interest either. What do the Heat need to do to improve so we can confidently win the series? Score more. I think defend better. That's overly simplistic, and yet that's the key to this, is that they gave up way too many points to guys like Brogdon, and I don't know what that's going to happen. I don't think they have anything else that they can do as far as adjustments. Duncan needs to be able to knock down those shots, but everything else went about as well as it does for Miami. It just sometimes they weren't able to do it as efficiently or consecutively, consistently as they'd like. And I think that's, you know, you hope for that sort of thing. You hope that they'll be able to knock down those shots, that they'll be able to play elite defense consistently for 48 minutes. But look, man, we saw the Milwaukee Bucks get beat by the Orlando Magic, and that's not a knock on the Magic necessarily. Vucevic is a hell of a good player and a former All-Star and a guy I watched up close a lot in Orlando, and then yet I don't think anybody would have predicted that they would be able to knock off the Bucks as easily as they did, that they would make them look silly out there. And it's a game one. It's a good start for Miami. They're in a good position where they can hold this. Again, without home court advantage, without anything clear as far as a typical playoff series, I think you do what you can. And Miami was able to pull away with a victory. So that's all that matters. Unfortunately, again, the fact that you did this, that it was as close as it was for as long as it was, without Oladipo, without Sabonis, that's a concern. But if Miami gets a little bit more production from some of their guys like Kelly Olynyk and particularly Duncan Robinson, maybe even Jay Crowder, I think you'll be in a good place. Again, it was a pretty convincing win, 12 points, and by that end of the fourth quarter, Miami had clearly established that they were beating Indiana and they were going to win this game. So solid. I sound pessimistic. I hear myself talking, and I apologize for that because it does seem like maybe it's not the best win, and I think that's pretty fair. But it's still a win, and that's all you can do. Hopefully Miami will be able to tighten up some of the things, the gaps in their offense, and be able to play defense a little bit more consistently. I wouldn't be surprised if we get that lineup change where Tyler Hero is inserted to the starting lineup, just so you can have Goran's production off the bench. I'm not sure how much that means to Dragic, but it should be interesting. Be sure to subscribe and follow this podcast to get the latest episode of Locked On Heat as soon as it's out. I'm David Ramil signing off, and thank you as always for your support.
Wrap it up, B.